This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will visit with the veteran journalist John Hill, who is now living in New Orleans after being a Capitol Bureau chief in Baton Rouge for 33 years. John Hill has become an activist, and Saturday, he and his partner, John Weimer, were victimized at their home as a surveillance camera caught someone spray painting a homophobic slur on their front door. We will talk with John Hill, John Weimer, and also we're slated to visit with John Dennison, a longtime journalist, television anchor in Monroe, of legendary proportions, who is also involved in gay issues as we speak. All this today, but now the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your local number. Outside the area, it is 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Three men in the studio today, all of whom are named John, and all here to talk about issues involving the LGBT community, and in particular, we're going to start with an incident that happened, an unfortunate one, in New Orleans on Saturday involving John Hill, who's one of our guests. 33 years he worked at the Capitol covering Louisiana politics, and his partner John Weimer is with us, and also John Dennison, a veteran anchor in Monroe, who was at the anchor desk for more than 30 years in Monroe and probably the best-known face in North Louisiana.
I would agree with that, and that's a compliment. Thank you, Jim. I appreciate that.
Now,
I had longevity, let's put it that way.
Now, I worked side-by-side with John covering events for many years, John Hill, and I never knew that he was gay. He was married to a beautiful woman at the time, but it's really irrelevant as far as his sexual orientation, and certainly I was aware of your reputation and unaware that you were gay.
It's not a well-kept secret. I didn't really, coming out is such a process, Jim. It's not something you just do overnight. It's not something you do just once, certainly not in my experience. When I took the job at KNOE in 1981 to anchor, I was a 24-year-old. I'd been with radio, and I started in Shreveport and had done radio news and was already coming to terms with my sexual orientation. I knew as a child, but I kind of pulled everything inside because I did grow up in northwest Louisiana. I did grow up in a very in a type of area where I didn't want to be. Oh, how can we put it? We didn't know what gay bashing was back then. We didn't even know what the word gay was. I just knew that I was different. So I dated. I, too, was married for a few years. And after my separation from my wife, I, too, sort of came out, certainly to my family. But I kept it quiet at work because I didn't think that I didn't think they would understand. I thought that they might target me and say, oh, well, we can't have a gay anchor man in Monroe, Louisiana. Mm-hmm. Well, fact of the matter is they did. And in the 90s, I came out a little more. I was with my then partner, and we wanted domestic partner benefits. And the station I was working at that time, KTVE, was owned by a company based in Indiana. I went to the owner of the company and said, my partner and I want to know if you'll offer domestic partner benefits so he can get on my insurance. And he said, I think it's great that you're gay. It's okay. I have lots of gay friends. But Louisiana doesn't require us to provide domestic partner benefits, so we won't be doing that. That was in about 1996.
How did you respond?
Well, I said, I appreciate your support, and perhaps one day we'll have a law so that you'll have to follow that law here in Louisiana. Of course, that station's been sold two or three times over. But the fact remains, here it is in 2013, and we don't have that law. We don't have a law that protects LGBT people, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender people in the workplace. They can be fired simply because of their sexual orientation. Many other states have this. Most other states have this. We don't.
But you survived and thrived in the most conservative area of one of the most conservative states in the United States. And many people, as you say, probably knew you were gay, but you were top anchor. How did you do it?
I was just my professional self. My inner circle, which is, I'm a very private person by nature anyway, even though it's strange to hear that. You think someone on television wants to be out in the public all the time. Jim, you probably know as well as I do. When the mic goes off, you just want to get in your car some days, go home, and not see anybody else. I'm a very private person in my private life, but I did have friends. I had a church. I had church friends because I'm a member of a welcoming and affirming church that has always been that way since I've been there.
Christian church, right?
It is a Christian church, a Baptist church, Northminster. And I want to talk a little bit about that when we get a chance. But I just maintained my professionality. I didn't let... It's like any good journalist, like my friend John Hill that I've known for so long. Like any good journalist, I don't let my personal beliefs or politics, whatever they may be, creep into my judgment of what's news, how it's to be reported. It's just the facts. Let's deal with the facts. If you had come up to me in the 1980s and asked if I was gay, I'd have been scared. I'd have been scared that I was going to get outed at work. But once I had a little more power and a little more surety that I need to be who I am, that the best way to fight homophobia and to fight any kind of questions people have about LGBT people is to come out and see that we're your neighbors, we're your friends, we're your doctors, we're your lawyers, we're your yard people, and we're your television news anchors. All of the above. We're no different.
And for 33 years, the man who was probably the most prolific person at the Capitol, who was such a rough-and-tumble reporter that Edwin Edwards once put out a press release calling him a, quote, liar and an ass, is John Hill. And for 33 years, you were married at that time, and then you retired, and there has been an epiphany of sorts, obviously, as we can see with you and your partner, John Weimer. What happened along the way with you, John Hill?
Well, you know, like many people in our generation, tried to suppress. We had an internal homophobia because there's so much hate all around us that we suppressed this and thought that we could function as a heterosexual person. And I did it really well, but eventually, you know, being false to yourself is going to catch up with you. And I landed in a psychiatric hospital in Dallas, Texas for about a month there. And I almost killed myself. I got to that point. So it wasn't an epiphany. I got to the rock bottom of it and said, okay, I am a gay person. And that was some, many, many moons ago, far longer than before I retired. And I want to say that to the person who's listening there, who's closeted and struggling with these issues, that if you will not believe how empowering and better it will be if you will come out and let everybody know who you really are. It's to thine own self be true. You can be false to no man. I mean, it's an incredibly powerful experience.
And you grew up in Bastrop.
I grew up
another
in Bastrop,
very conservative part of the
extremely
state.
Extremely conservative.
I would imagine that if you were a teenager at your time and place, which would have been, what, late 50s, early 60s, it would not have been a comfortable thing to announce to the world in Bastrop, Louisiana, that you were gay.
It would have been suicidal, I imagine.
So was that part of the reason why you lived
a
different
suppression.
Life?
Yeah, that was the suppression. It was just the whole society suppression. You know, whenever you have this homophobia and you have official prejudice against gay people, you're causing people emotional harm. You're causing them financial harm. But nobody should live in fear of who they are, being exposed, or nobody should live in fear for their safety because of who they are, because of whether it's gender, whether it's race, whether it's disabilities, whether it's sexuality. No one should have to live in fear in the United States of America in 2013.
How did you and John meet?
On the internet.
Really?
Yes. Uh-huh.
And where are you from, John Weimer?
Morgan City, Louisiana.
Morgan City. And I would imagine there was an immediate attraction. How long did it take before you became a couple?
It was pretty quick.
Pretty quick.
It was.
And now you've been together about 5 years and are planning at some point to get married.
Yes, we are.
But you will not be married, most likely, in Louisiana.
Well, we can't get married.
Well,
in
unless
we
the law changes.
We have to go to another state where there's marriage equality.
You don't think the law is going to change in the next 6 months or so in Louisiana?
I don't believe.
I don't think so.
It will happen. And it's coming. And anybody who's read the United States Supreme Court decision and realized that Kennedy, Justice Kennedy, tied it to equal protection and the Fifth and the 14th Amendment. No, this battle is over. The dominoes are going to fall. There are being suits filed all over the country. Federal judges at the trial court level are ruling in favor, citing this Supreme Court decision in June. And it is going to happen.
Well, John Hill does everything in a big way. He not only announced to the world he was gay, he's also chair of the Forum for Equality Foundation. In that organization, I think both of our other guests are.
Let's make a distinction. John was just recently, after yeoman service of several years, three years, chaired our 501c4, which is the Forum for Equality. And I'm the incoming chair of the 501c3 Foundation. It can be a little confusing, but John's board is involved in political activism, and I'm involved in education as a 501c3 nonprofit.
Well, you spent yesterday, at least a portion of it, John Hill, with the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
Yes, I am.
What happened?
Well, Saturday morning, I was just gotten up. We slept late. It's a little after 8, about 8:15 or 8:30. And I heard the phone ring, and I heard John Weimer's phone ring. And then I heard him say, "What?" And I knew something was wrong. Went in there, and he told me.
Our tenant, first floor tenant, was going into her business, and she noticed that there was spray paint on the shutters to her business. And she looked a little closer and realized that it had a homophobic slur on the doors. And so she called us up and woke me up, and I was still a little groggy, and she told me about it, and I immediately ran downstairs to go check it out. And that's when we saw the spray paint on the door, and about a minute or so later, I looked up on our balcony and realized that a gay pride flag that we had hanging on the balcony had been torn down, and the grommets from the flag were still remaining up there. And so we immediately knew that someone did something very hateful.
No doubt. That's a crime. And you were quoted as saying, "John, they're fooling around with the wrong gay fellow."
They picked the wrong person to commit a hate crime on. That's for sure. I conferred with John Dennison and the other officers of the Forum for Equality afterwards, and we said, "Well, let's report it." And John said, wisely, "Let's wait and see what the police have to say." So we finished walking the dog, and John went into the next-door neighbor's house and looked at a videotape.
Our neighbor has security cameras on her building. Unfortunately, we did not have them. We were in the talks of getting them, but just hadn't gotten around to installing anything yet. So I was reviewing the tapes, and I was completely prepared to see two drunks, you know, climbing on each other's shoulders, ripping down the flag and spraying the slur on the door, and was totally surprised when I saw a man pull up in a white minivan and casually open his rear door and pull out a ladder, climbed up the ladder and ripped down the flag, and then put the ladder back in his van along with the flag, closed the back door, opened up the side door, and opened and got his can of paint and started spraying. And it was all very casual. You know, he was deliberate when he put the ladder down because it was an aluminum mm-hmm. ladder. He put it down real slow.
Can you see his face?
Unfortunately, you can't see his face because it was aimed at my neighbor's property.
Right.
He was a little bit out of camera range.
Yeah. You could see his neck
yeah,
down.
It is available on the internet. I couldn't see his face, but we'll talk more with John Hill, John Weimer, and John Dennison about what it's like to be gay in Louisiana and what happened in New Orleans this past Saturday. 297-5633, your number, back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633, 877-217-5757. Inkster's show at WRKF.org. You can reach us in any of those ways. And we continue our discussion with the trio of Johns, John Dennison, John Hill, and John Weimer. Now, Saturday in New Orleans, you live in the French Quarter, right?
No, we live on Georgia Street.
Close
in
the, to the French
in the American sector, okay. The Lafayette Square area. But it's downtown, yeah. And it's an 1832 row house, Georgian federal-style row house.
Not far from where Lee Harvey Oswald used to hang out, right?
That's correct.
That's right. So I would imagine that there are many gay people who live in that area. It's not like you're the only one. Why do you think they picked on you and John?
Well, we were in the media quite a bit. For starting out with June 26th, the Supreme Court decision day, Forum for Equality had established a plan that we were going to have a big rally on the day of the ruling if it was successful, and it did. And so John and I were on the in the square. We were celebrating. There was a moment there when I said, "Hey, let's not wait till it's legal in Louisiana. Let's just go ahead and go to New York and get married." He said, "Okay." We kissed. The cameras went click, 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 and there was the picture of us before the pride flag kissing in Jackson Square. So we just decided to hang the flag up on our balcony. And we had it up there since June 26th. And I guess I did an op-ed piece for the New Orleans Times-Picayune that Louisiana is very hostile towards its LGBT citizens, officially and in the law. And I went there and enumerated the ways that we're discriminated against in state law. And I had, from that, I got an invitation to do radio talk shows in New Orleans, so I was on the radios quite a bit. And then last week, there was a story on one of the channels in New Orleans about a couple that's gotten married in Iowa, and they're suing the state of Louisiana for recognition of their marriage. They came to me because our organization is considering filing a lawsuit, and I was on the TV then in front of the house. And so it could be one of two things. It could be the person that saw any of those photographs or any of the TV interviews or something like that and specifically looked up our address and targeted us. Or someone who'd been passing by the neighborhood, you know, the house, and seen that flag hanging there. And after a while, it just finally just grated on him too much. He had to strike out at us. But whatever. It's just not right for anyone in the United States of America to have to live in fear of who they are, or live in fear of opening your front door. I mean, our front door, like many, you know, the French Quarter type houses, our front door opens right onto the sidewalk. I could easily have been out late and come back home and been walking my dog and walked right out there.
As John Weimer said, you know, if this had been just a couple of, you know, teens out on a lark and they just decided, you know, hey, let's just grab and pull it down, it might be one thing. That would be just a random act of vandalism. But this was a premeditated, targeted hate crime. And we define hate crime as someone who commits a crime against someone based on a particular bias that real or perceived of that person. And the hate crime in this case was because of sexual orientation. Obviously, the flag represents freedom and equal rights for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. And it also is just a very visible symbol of being out and proud. So this person knew what they were doing. They knew who they were targeting, whether they knew them by name or personally. They knew that there was at least one person and possibly more gay people who lived there.
Well, they had, it was plural, so they knew it was more than one.
That's true. They did say F. We
I don't know.
I don't know though. I want to say that word. I'll call it the F word, plural.
Okay. 297-5633 for John Weimer, John Hill, and John Dennison. Veronica on Goodwood. We start with you, Veronica. You're on the air with John, and John. Hi, Veronica.
Hi. Growing up African-American in the South, I often asked my parents, why did they bother to stay in a segregated state? And, you know, I've sat through their explanations about someone has to fight. So I ask you that question. Why should someone stay in a state that's alienated against them? Why not move to Minnesota or San Francisco?
Well,
I love Louisiana.
I love Louisiana. It's my
I
home.
Love Louisiana, too.
I have the right to live happy. I have the right to pursue happiness right here in my home state.
When we go on vacation, you know, we have fun, and then all of a sudden you get to a point where it's like, okay, I'm ready to go home, you know.
Veronica, back in the 60s, after a black friend of mine who I learned was gay only after 20 years later when he died of AIDS, desegregated lunch counters up in North Louisiana. We went around after the Civil Rights Bill to go in there. And I remember a waitress coming in. She was so angry at me, the white guy, blinging a black person to the restaurant with him, slammed a cup of coffee down the table so that it spilled out onto my lap, onto me. And I saw that face of hatred. And I thought, we can beat this. And I feel the same way about this. I've seen the face of hatred. This is an act of hate. Clearly, the police, the initial officers took one look at that videotape and said, this is the targeted, you were targeted, this is a hate crime. They called in the detective. He looked at it and said, yes, this is a hate crime. Call in the FBI. The FBI came and looked at the tape and said, yes, this is a hate crime. They've offered a $2,500 reward. We hope this guy gets caught, and we hope the message gets out that this is not right. This is not the way anyone should have to live in Louisiana or anywhere else.
Have you ever had anything like this happen before?
No, never. A couple of things said to me on the street here and there by somebody, you know, a little passing by.
We were holding hands one day, and somebody said, oh, don't do that.
Don't do that in front of me.
All right. John Dennison, what about you?
I have actually had, I've had that F word used at me once in Pecanland Mall in Monroe as I was very casually just shopping one day, and a kid with two girls, like he was probably 16 or 17 with two of his girlfriends, they were walking by and he just mumbled it as I was walking. This was probably somewhere in the early 90s. And I was just stunned. I kind of looked around, and they quickly walked out of the mall. And I walked outside, and the first thing I could think of to say was, yeah, is that the best you have? And they just kept walking. And I really wanted to go, you know, who are your parents? Because, you probably hear this word at school, but I have a feeling that there's probably more at home that you, as a teenager, would walk by a grown man, at that time I was in my 30s, walk by a grown man and say that kind of thing just in passing. It was very brazen for a kid to do because he knew he was targeting somebody who might be closeted and who might just, you know, keep walking. You know, it's a very shame-based kind of remark to make at that time. Also, I had a disgruntled employee at KNOE, the television station where I worked the longest in Monroe, key in that word on the hood of my car. This was in the 80s. And I wasn't out. But I did tell my then general manager that I wanted something done about it, and nothing was ever done.
Mm. Well, you had the ability to work in any market in America. John Dennison, as you can hear, speaks very well. He looks good, but you stayed in essentially Monroe, Louisiana. Do you think that your orientation may have held you back in any way?
I'm not so sure. Certainly, I guess it depends on the time frame you're looking at. Here we are in the 2000s, and we can have this kind of conversation. We can all be who we are without, we hope, fear of any kind of reprisals when we walk out of this building today. Unfortunately, we also see that that's not totally the case with my friends John and John. But by and large, we have support people. We have our own lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender support groups. And I say that as family, meaning our friends who are also like us. But we also have our great straight allies, and we have our own families whom we've come out to over the years. And, you know, we're their friends, they're our friends. We go to dinner with them. I have more straight friends than I have gay friends, frankly. And that's not by choice. That just happens to be, I guess, in Monroe, Louisiana. That just seems to be what's happened. And certainly my friends at Northminster Church. So the times are a little different now. Back then, in the 80s certainly, it was just a lot more difficult. And certainly we put our own constraints on ourselves. like, oh, you know, I don't want to be the least bit limp-wristed, which I'm not. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I thought that might give something away. You know, if I were to be a little limp-wristed on the air, which, you know, how insane is that to think? But that's what you think about when you think other people are going to judge you and possibly persecute you just because of the way you
were born. Or deface your historic home.
Well, and if this can happen in New Orleans, I would think it could happen anywhere.
It does happen everywhere, and it happens every day all across this country. It's one of the things that the gay community has been organized around, is to get hate laws everywhere. And New Orleans is the most gay-friendly city in the South. You know, I wonder, in here in Baton Rouge, where the city council even refuses to consider an ordinance saying that everybody's welcome here. I mean, that's one of the most officially homophobic city councils in the state of Louisiana. But, again, the Forum for Equality is working with city council in Shreveport and the mayor and the Shreveport Chamber of Commerce and the Black Chamber of Commerce in Shreveport, and are moving towards having a law that gives everybody job and housing protections in the public and private sector in Shreveport, Louisiana.
And we have non-discrimination ordinances or policies in place in several cities in Louisiana because of the Forum for Equality's work. I walked into the office of Mike Vining, who is an assistant to Mayor Jamie Mayo in Monroe, about 2 years ago.
Former coach.
Exactly, from ULM. And he's now like the chief of staff for Mayor Mayo, one of the nicest, most professional, genuine guys you'll ever meet. And I walked in with a couple of other people from the forum and a mutual friend of ours who's an attorney there in Monroe to ask, hey, do you think we can get a non-discrimination ordinance in the city of Monroe? People do not discriminate in city hiring based on sexual orientation, gender identity, or gender expression. Can we get that before our city council? And before we even sat down, Mike looked at us and said, I've done you one better. We have just unilaterally decided to go ahead and update our own policy and procedures here and add it ourselves at the administrative level. The mayor basically, with a stroke of a pen, went in and said, Monroe will not discriminate based on sexual orientation in city hiring. We were floored, we were stunned, we were ecstatic. Monroe. Mm-hmm. Shreveport's coming soon. We feel it coming soon. We've done it in Opelousas.
And the mayor of Baton Rouge, Kip Holden, has also had a non-discrimination policy in hiring in the city government that's part of their employee plan up in the city. We have Opelousas is underway, Lafayette's underway. We have it in New Orleans. We have housing protection as well. It's changing, and you know, this is a big train coming down the track too. Because if you look at the poll data, you see among 20-somethings, support for same-sex marriage, for example, is running around 9 out of 10. And companies in corporate America have caught on to this and caught on to the fact that if they want the young creative class, they've got to have a non-discrimination policy on the books.
297-5633 if you'd like to talk, and I'm sure some folks are listening and perhaps mesmerized by these gentlemen. This is a conversation that probably 10 years ago would not have happened on this show, but it is happening right now, and John Weimer, John Hill, and John Dennison are certainly forthcoming about their lives, their careers, and where we go from here. What about what's happened in Baton Rouge with the revelation a few weeks ago that these men in parks who were just hanging out in parks were essentially entrapped and prosecuted, or at least not prosecuted, but arrested under an unconstitutional law?
Well, we saw that, and we're just as floored as probably many Louisianans were at what was going on here. These men were targeted strictly because of perceived sexual orientation. Doesn't mean that they were gay. They were perceived to be gay simply because they were in a public park that had a reputation as a so-called cruising spot. The bottom line here is this is a law that should have been pulled out of Louisiana's statutes 10 years ago after the Supreme Court struck down anti-sodomy laws nationwide with Lawrence v. Texas. No one in the legislature stepped up to say, we need to right this wrong and get this off the books. And Louisiana is not alone. There are about a dozen other states that still have them on their books, even though the Supreme Court has negated all of those laws with Lawrence v. Texas.
Yeah,
they're using this law, the sheriff's office here was using this law strictly to target people. And I appreciate that Sheriff Gautreau immediately came out and said, this was wrong, we're going to right this wrong, I'm going to the Sheriff's Association, I'm going to see if we can get this through the legislature next session and get this law repealed. But the fact remains, for probably 2 and maybe even 3 years, mm-hmm. it was used to target these people and sting operations.
That's the thing. So, Paul, you know, I think it's nice that he changed or reversed the policy like that, but it was in place for a year and a half mm-hmm. before they kept continually arresting people on an unconstitutional law. Again, that goes back to no one should feel fear in their lives when they just go out in public. And that's an example of discriminatory and demeaning things that are said that harm children. In the Supreme Court decision June 26, Justice Kennedy said that when a governor or official says marriage should be one man, between one man and one woman, that they are demeaning the children of same-sex couples. 40,000 children in California, he specifically cited, are harmed by that kind of rhetoric. And it's hard to make people understand you're harming children, you're harming individuals. There's a new study out by the National Institutes of Health. It is a Columbia University peer-reviewed study that shows in states that have gone through the anti-same-sex marriage things like Louisiana has, that there's an enormous increase in mental health problems and physical problems and the health care problems of the LGBT person. It was a study of 34,000 Americans over a 10-year period.
But in this Louisiana legislature, will anyone come forward in the next session with a bill to do away with what is an unconstitutional part of the criminal code?
Well, there's certainly gay leadership is going to be working towards that goal. There are some very gay-friendly legislators in the legislature.
Can it pass?
That's a tough question because some people say no, it couldn't, because legislators are so fearful of a reaction from the religious right if they do anything whatsoever that's perceived as being pro-gay. So I don't know. Now, on the other hand, it's a law that can't be enforced. But listen, you go down in the South Downs and University Garden subdivision area, you go in and look in your deeds and they're there, and you'll find there's a little provision in there saying that no person of a color can reside in there except as a domestic. So that's still on the
books. This is where you used to live, too.
I saw it on my own deed. And, of course, it's unenforceable, but it's still there. There's segregation laws all throughout our statutes that are still hanging around there.
297-5633, 877-217-5757. There obviously is discrimination that prevails in this state, but it's at least something we're talking about. So we'll talk some more when we return with John Dennison, John Hill, and John Weimer after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. John Hill, John Weimer, and John Dennison, and Vivian in New Orleans. Good morning, Vivian. You're on the air.
Good morning. I was just calling because you were talking about laws, and you were talking about the mayor in Monroe being able to, with the stroke of a pen, change the laws. And I was wondering, it won't stop discrimination, but can our president, with the stroke of a pen, make laws that discriminate against people's sexual orientation unlawful?
No, but a mayor or a governor of a state can issue an executive order prohibiting discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity or gender expression. And that has happened in Louisiana on the state level. Governor Edwin Edwards, who's still a hero to me for this, was the first governor to sign a non-discriminatory executive order in 1992. Governor Mike Foster did not renew it. Executive orders
executive orders die with the end of a term of the person issuing them. So we had it from 1992 to 1996. Then we didn't have it again until 2004 when Kathleen Blanco renewed it to 2008 when Bobby Jindal came in. And Bobby Jindal will not even acknowledge that we have requested meetings with him. He will not meet with us.
And here we're only talking about state employees. We're not talking about in the private sector. Polls show, Jim, that the majority of Americans believe we already have employment protections for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender workers based on federal statute. We don't. The ENDA bill, as it's called, Employment Non-Discrimination Act, has been coming up for a vote routinely in Congress for years. Now, finally, this year, it's beginning to get a little bit of traction, thanks to, among other people, Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah, who is
a Mormon Republican.
And I was just in Salt Lake City just a couple of weeks ago for a National Equality Federation meeting. Now that I'm chair of the 501c3 Forum for Equality Foundation in Louisiana, I thought it would be helpful to go out and learn some more about what we're facing, particularly post-DOMA and post-Prop 8. Right. And what I learned about the Salt Lake City, the attitudes now, when it was revealed that the Mormon Church funneled huge sums of money into California to fight marriage equality, there was a backlash. And the Mormon Church is beginning to swing around on some social issues involving the LGBT community, particularly the Boy Scouts. The Boy Scouts are now allowing gay scouts in their troops. The Mormon Church has more sponsored Boy Scout troops than any other religious sect or religious denomination in America. So, yes, even in Mormon Utah, Orrin Hatch can change his mind on employment non-discrimination. Right. But we still have to work at the state level.
All right. I'll read a few emails, and then we'll go back to the phone lines. There is still time to get in with John Dennison, who you just heard, John Hill and John Weimer, 297-5633. Here's an email from Gene Ponte, who I'm sure you know.
My good friend in Monroe,
He says, nobody has carried the level of professionalism in our profession like John Dennison has, and I know a lot of folks, including me, are proud of his efforts here. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Gene. All right. He's a longtime friend, one of the hardest working sports anchors I've ever had the privilege to be around and still going at it. And a good man. And that goes back to what we were talking about earlier. How do you be a successful gay man in Monroe? Well, you do it by just being a good human being.
Taylor Caffrey, good attorney and host of Hootenanny Power on Saturday nights on WRKF, says, does the Forum for Equality have any plans to honor the late Shreveport Times Journal newsman and editor Jim Montgomery?
My goodness, and that's somebody that John Hill can speak to. They were friends for many years. And, in fact, Jim Montgomery mentored me when I was a teenager, and I was a photography intern at the Times. He was one of the first people that I met, and I knew then what a good man this was. He was a good journalist. Back then, he was the theater critic, but he eventually evolved into an editorial writer par excellence and, of course, moved over to the Journal. And he is sorely missed. John?
It's very painful for me to talk about Jim because he's an extremely close friend and of mine for four decades, and I'm still pained by his death, and I deeply regret he's not here now to see all these things happening.
Keith on Essen. Keith, please be brief. You're on with John Hill, John Dennison, and John Weimer. Hi, Keith.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm a old school conservative Republican, Jeffersonian, so but I'm pro equal rights for everyone, including gay marriage. But I have a question. Is there a actual legal need to have these laws put on our local books that address this issue, or is it already protected federally?
No, there's not. And there is a need, but it's the only way we can get any protection in Louisiana is to go through municipal ordinances or mayoral executive orders.
Okay, Bruce and Walden. Bruce, you're on with John Hill, John Weimer, and John Dennison. Hi, Bruce.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, I went to the Equality Louisiana March a few months ago and was incredibly impressed by the spirit and the insight and commitment of both gay and straight allies and kind of realized, excuse me, gentlemen, I kind of realized how deprived we are when we exclude and segregate the gay community. I mean, that community has so much to offer in terms of its knowledge, experience, insight, creativity, and just that comment, gentlemen. Thanks.
Thank you. And, you know, in this day and time, who doesn't know somebody who has a different sexual orientation than themselves? Who doesn't know a gay person? Who doesn't know a lesbian? I venture to say, if you don't, well, if you live in Northeast Louisiana, you haven't been watching television for 30 years. And, you know, and I've had more people tell me they've invited me into their bedrooms at night at 10 o'clock, and I just let that line go.
Go away.
You know,
stop.
It's like just, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
No telling.
I'm not inviting. I don't want to be in anybody else's bedroom. I don't want anybody to be in mine. But, here we are today, and what are you afraid of?
Well, no telling how many children were conceived.
Well, I'd like to think that Johnny Carson had something to do with that.
He might have had something, but if they got started a little earlier in the evening, John Dennison probably had something to do with certain parts of our state. Sonny in Monroe. Sonny, good morning. You're on WRKF.
Good morning. And
hey,
I know all three of you gentlemen.
Hey, Sonny.
Hi, Sonny.
And I just wanted to weigh in and say that I'm so proud of both of you guys.
Thanks.
And I think you're so brave.
People say that you're courageous. I admire your courageous or being brave. I don't look at it that way. I just look at it as I'm being me. I'm being authentic. And I'm speaking for the person who can't speak out. I'm speaking for the state employee who's sitting there maybe listening to the show who is fear of being fired. And I'm the closeted person at home who's scared. You know, I'm speaking for them. I'm not just, you know, I don't consider it being brave or courageous. I just think it's being honest.
Well, yeah, and I mean, if it's who you are, it's who you are. But some people don't have the nerve, the guts, or whatever to come out.
I recognize that voice, Sonny Merriweather, a longtime journalist at 297-5633. You mentioned, John Hill, that Governor Jindal has declined to meet with gay organizations.
He's declined to even acknowledge receipt of a request for a meeting.
Well, and he's never, to my knowledge, even uttered the word gay in public.
I don't really know. I know that on the day of the Supreme Court decision, he issued a statement that we're going to stick with marriage between one man and one woman, and we think that every child deserves to be raised by a mother and a father. And I think he just needs to read the Supreme Court decision.
Maybe he doesn't know any gay people.
Right. Yes, he does.
But here's I'd like to issue an invitation to the governor today. I reported back when he first took office that he was choppering around the state using a state police helicopter on taxpayer dollars and going to evangelical Christian churches, fundamentalist churches, which tried to say really harmful, false things about LGBT people and speaking to his base. Now, I don't know that he ever repaid the state all that money. That's okay. I'll just write off that my tax dollars went to that. But he never once came to my church in Monroe, Northminster Baptist Church at the corner of Lammy Lane and Loop Road. I'd love for him to come. Sit down with me. We'll sing a few hymns. We'll hear a wonderful sermon by the Reverend Dr. C. Welton Gaddy, who was president of the Interfaith Alliance during the week and comes home to his home in Monroe on the weekends to preach. And he'll meet some gay people. He'll meet some very open-minded and loving straight people. And we'll just have a good church Sunday.
He's running for president. There's little doubt about that. How will his stance or lack thereof on gay issues affect his presidential aspirations?
I'm going to say this right now. Right?
Okay.
I'm going to say this point. Because the gay vote in Ohio and Virginia was greater than the margin between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. The president would have still won without those two states because of Florida, but he would won with just barely won. It is a big block of vote before
this last election, I think there was like 72% of the gay vote went to Democratic. This last election, it was up to almost 80% because of this anti-rhetoric. If the I'm saying this to my conservative friends, you know, look at the poll data. Look what's coming up on the 20-somethings and 30-somethings. This is not a good path for the Republican Party to be on. And there's a recent commentator on television who said if the Republican Party doesn't get off its social agenda and quit beating the Hispanics with the immigration things, it's possible they cannot win a national election for two or three more cycles after this one, after this presidency. So this is not a good path to the presidency to continue these anti-gay, anti-women, anti-immigrants policies.
If he is not recognizing the LGBT community, if he runs for president in 2016, he will look as stupid as George Wallace did when he stood in the door of a high school in
the
60s. And I freely steal it from John Hill. But, you know, it just rings true.
It does.
How far do you want to be on the wrong side of history when civil rights and basic human dignities have moved so forward over these last decades? Either come with us or get out of the way, because I guarantee you we're not going back in any closets.
Well, sometimes people's opinions change over time, and often I've found that men and women who have children who are gay suddenly have an epiphany on this issue.
Families are where this discussion actually needs to start, because I couldn't have told my parents when I had these feelings at 9 or 10 years old what I was feeling. I couldn't have. I didn't think in my mind. And, of course, you know, I was born in the mid-50s, and this was a different era. But now parents hopefully are more open to hearing these kinds of things from their children, because the alternative, I'm afraid, can be deadly. We've seen a rash of suicides in northeast Louisiana over the last several years, and while it hasn't been publicized, we know privately, we know through talking with family and friends, that some of these teenage kids kill themselves because they were having trouble dealing with their sexual orientation. Not that they were having trouble with it so much as they were fearful what would happen if they would come out, or they were bullied.
It's one of the leading causes of teenage male suicide. Mm-hmm. One of the things I want to say, we all owe debt to Harvey Milk, the murdered San Francisco assemblyman, who said, come out wherever you are. If people know us, as people know us more, they're less prejudiced. And this is very true in statistics and poll data. We find that it's very easy to hate the gays. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to hate your friend John Dennison or John Hill or John Weimer. So when you know a person, things change. And so that's why we say to everyone, it's important for everybody to come out and make your presence known. Because let me tell you something, we're everywhere. You may not know it. Your heart surgeon may be a gay person. Do you want not to have a leading heart surgeon on you just because he's gay? No, you just don't care. You want the best you can. But we're everywhere. We're sitting silently. We sometimes are sitting back listening to your slurs and that sort of things that you're saying. And you're totally unaware that we're gay people. And we're there, everywhere.
You remember Ken Hollis. He was a conservative Republican who was out front on gay issues. And he had a son who was gay.
And he's one of our leading contributors to the Forum for Equality.
He
passed
away a few years ago, but He took a brave stand, being it wouldn't matter whether he was a Democrat or a Republican in Louisiana, but at the time, he was ahead of the pack.
Okay. There were several people in this legislature that stood up for gay people in that session. Senator Joel Chesson being one of the leading ones, and also former Senator Mark Morial, the mayor of New Orleans and now head of the National Urban League.
Rancy in Millerville, please be brief. Hi, Rancy, you're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. I want to give a big thanks to you, Jim, for featuring this vitally important subject today, and a subject that we as a community need to discuss. You're really out there in front. Thanks.
Thank you. Well, John Hill, what would you say if the person who spray-painted homophobic slur on your front door, what would you say to that gentleman if you have a chance to confront him in court or elsewhere?
I've already decided if he's arrested, I'm going to get him sent to the judge. Listen, don't send him. There's no point in sending this man to prison. He'll lose his livelihood. He'll probably become, you know, prisons are crime schools. There's no good to that. A better sentence would be for him to have to serve like 300 community service hours for LGBT organizations. And I guarantee you, after 300 hours of hanging around with LGBT people, he will not be very prejudiced.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. We got a roll. It was a quick hour, and hopefully we'll have each of you back, perhaps together at some point very soon. But three brave men, John Hill, John Dennison, and John Weimer. And we'll be back.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you.
Back tomorrow with General Russell Honore. Until then, for Kevin Gallagher, I'm Jim Engster. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.